Welcome to Inside Jag Nation, a weekly podcast that gives you an in-depth look at the South Alabama Jaguars. You can find a new podcast uploaded weekly online at usajaguars.com or take the podcast with you on your smartphone by subscribing for free on iTunes. Just search South Alabama Jaguars.
Welcome to Inside Jag Nation, the weekly podcast of the University of South Alabama Department of Athletics. Visiting this week with assistant baseball coach Alan Luckey prior to the Jaguars' regular season finale this weekend. Coach, thanks for taking the time with us today.
Yeah, glad to be here, Brian.
We're headed into the final week of the regular season. Jaguars 34-18 overall, 20-7 in the Sun Belt, got a half-game lead on Coastal Carolina. You know, as you look towards the Troy series and beyond, Sun Belt tournament, NCAA regional, I think, is very much the hope. Now, how confident are you in this team's ability to have success moving forward?
Well, I'm extremely confident right now. I mean, we're swinging the bats really well. We got a couple of pleasant surprises out of the bullpen and Andy Arguez and Avery Geyer over this past week. We're playing good defense. We're leading or tied for the lead in fielding in the Sun Belt. So we're doing a lot of things right, but most importantly right now, we're really swinging the bat well. We've won 9 out of our last 10, which makes, you know, which is a big factor for getting in the NCAA tournament as far as being hot, you know, at the right time late in the season. So a lot of things are going well, and we're looking forward to the Troy series Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
You know, you touched on all three parts of the game. Is there one in the mind of yourself, Coach Calvi, the rest of the staff, that becomes more important when it's postseason play rather than regular season?
Yeah, and the answer is what it always all the answer always is to us, you know, which is pitching and defense. Those come first. Hitting comes and goes, but if your pitching is consistent, your defense is consistent, you know, then the odds are you only need to score 5-6 runs to win a game. Now we've had some days this year where we've scored a whole lot more than that, but if the pitching and defense is there in the postseason, you certainly got a chance.
So, you know, one of your primary functions in your role as an assistant is working on defense. And this year it's a .977 fielding percentage, which is top 40 nationally and right there with Louisiana Lafayette at the top of the Sun Belt. You know, in your mind, what's the key component? What goes into being good defensively?
Well, a lot of it just comes with, you know, teaching and training. And in our case, it's learning from other guys that put us in position to try to teach these kids that come in each year. But there's certain fundamental things about playing defense, particularly in the infield, which is where my strongest suit is with the infielders. But I got to learn from the guy that's well regarded as the best infield coach in the world, and that's Bone Hill for the Miami Marlins. I mean, I got the opportunity to work with him for 2 years, watched him teach, watch him work with guys like Mike Lowell, Gold Glove winner, Alex Gonzalez, Gold Glove winner, Louis Castillo, Derek Lee. I mean, his guys turn out to be Gold Glove winners in the big leagues, and he's done that consistently. Fortunately for me, that's who I got to work with and learn from, and the things that they teach in Miami are the exact same things that we teach here. It's about paying attention to the details, just like it is in just about every aspect of the game. But like I was just working with Donovan just a few minutes ago, he's been primarily playing right field, but he's also a third baseman for us. And when I'm watching him take ground balls, I'm looking at basically six things, and if I see all six things, then we're in good shape.
You know, is this something that – you have to do a lot of it during fall practice because there's not a lot of practice time in the spring, or do you really kind of get into it hard in January when the guys come back in preseason practice? Where do you put your primary focus to get good in that area?
Yeah, the key to me is the fall, you know, and one of the things that I try to take pride in is to – they're supposed to be good players or they wouldn't be here. So in the fall, you know, the first – and I tell them on the first day, the first team meeting, I'm not going to say a word to you the first 2 or 3 weeks. You do it your way. Your way got you here. If your way works for you and the results are good, I'm not interested in changing somebody. But if the results are not as good as we need them to be, then we'll do it my way. And, you know, and most kids, they need a little help in one area or the other. I mean, it's just like Donovan. The kid was, I mean, he'll tell you if he was sitting here, he was terrible last year. He was terrible. And now Matt Bolger's as good as they get at fielding ground balls. I mean, fielding percentage was 1,000 last year. It's 1,000 this year. and limited playing time, but nevertheless, it's 1,000. Donovan's glove is now as good as Bolger's, you know, and that's a 12-month window of a kid, you know, that's willing to work and willing to listen and willing to pay attention to the details. And we just hit 50 ground balls to him just a second ago, no errors. I mean, he's bought in and it's paying off.
Another area where you contribute in your role is in base running, and you've got Travis Swaggerty, 18 steals. Dylan Hardy has 16. They're both top 10 in the Sun Belt going into this final weekend. You know, in your mind, what makes for a good base runner? And when you have one in your role, how do you help them get better?
Well, the primary key to being a great base runner is just instincts. And for the most part, kids either have good instincts or they don't on the bases. The second piece of it is information and education. I mean, you got to teach. And we spend a lot of time in the fall, you know, going from, you know, even the on deck circle, you know, can be part of the base running, you know, part of our program in terms of helping runners that are coming from second base to the plate, et cetera. But we go from the on deck circle to things they need to know coming out of the box and as a hitter, everything they need to know at first base, everything they need to know at second base, what kind of leads do we use at third base, what do you do on a safety squeeze, what do you do on a suicide squeeze. There's a busload of details in base running. And the truth of the matter is, from little league all the way to the big leagues, it is the least taught aspect of the game. It just is. And that's why you always see huge base running mistakes in the postseason in the major leagues. You see it every year. It's just there's not enough time spent on base running. I was talking to Joe Espada, a friend of mine. He coaches third for the Yankees. And he just last week, and he was telling me the exact same thing. He said, we don't spend time on it, and yet we expect them to do it perfectly. It's our fault for not spending the time on it. And it's the truth. And so here we understand that a very smart, great base running team, you know, is probably going to be equivalent to 4 or 5 wins over the course of the season. Well, 4 or 5 can get you in the NCAA tournament, or it can make you stay home. And of course, you know, a lot of the base running stuff I learned from Steve Kittrell, you know, who was here when I first got here. He's one of the greatest base running coaches, you know, and probably always will be in NCAA history. So I got a chance to learn from him and got a chance to pick the brains of Bo Porter, who coached third for the Braves, and Joe Espada, that coaches third for the Yankees, and Rich Donnelly's coached third in the big leagues for 30-something years. So it's about picking guys' brains that really do it at a high level, making sure that you pay attention so that you're in a good position to teach.
And, you know, the last aspect of the team that you work with is you assist in some of the hitting and batting stuff. And this team leads the Sun Belt in hits, walks, runs, batting average, on-base percentage, slugging percentage, across the board. This is about best offense in the Sun Belt. You know, as you look at it, you know, game to game, what has made this team as effective as it's been at the plate this spring?
I think there's probably 4 or 5 factors that are huge. I think the biggest one of all, Coach Calvi does an outstanding job of staying on our kids in BP about laying off pitches on the edges. In other words, we're not trying to hit pitches on the outside black of the plate or the inside black of the plate. Lay off the edges and force the pitcher to get balls over the middle of the plate. If we're swinging at pitches on the black or off the black during BP, he's on them, he stays on them. And I honestly believe that's the number one factor in terms of the difference between last few years' offense versus this one. I think that's number one. Number two, we invested some money in the fall and bought some pitch recognition software. So our kids are watching videos of pitchers trying to figure out what that pitch is when it's no more than 12 inches out of his hand. The video plays, the ball pops out of his hand, we're asking, and they take tests, and they get grades on how well they can pick up the pitch out of their hand. I think that's been a factor for us. Another huge factor is we played 5 freshmen a lot last year. And, you know, 4 or 5 of those kids are back in the lineup, you know, every day for us now. So they're a year smarter, they're a year stronger, they're a year more intelligent, and they are certainly swinging at better pitches. I think all of those things are huge. From my standpoint as a third base coach and trying to run the offense, the smartest thing for me is to make sure that I know my personnel. I know which kids can really run, which kids are mediocre, which kids are slow, which kids are good at sack bunting, base hit bunting, suicide squeeze, the safety squeeze. You got to know what they're good at. And that way, you're putting them in a position to succeed because you're asking them to do something that you know that they're good at. If I'm asking a kid to sack bunt that's no good at, well, that's my fault. You know, for I should have never put the sign on. So it's about knowing your personnel and then watching these kids develop. And like I said, the fact that four or five kids were in that lineup last year and they're back this year, I think that's huge.
So I want to ask, when you're in the box, and I mean, you know your kids really well, but you is it just off the top of your head that you remember everyone's strengths and weaknesses? Do you have a little crib sheet in your back pocket you're taking peeks at? You know, how do you go about that so that you're prepared in the box when they're in the batter's box at the plate or on a base?
In the fall, I have a grid that I keep, and I'll update it throughout the course of the fall because we play 2022 squad games. So I'm watching them in practice. I'm watching them in squad games. At the end of the fall, I have what's a master list to me. This kid can do this, this, and this. This kid can do this, this, and this. Don't ask this kid to do this, et cetera. I stay on that chart in the early spring before we start playing games to make sure that what I think I saw is in fact what I'm seeing. Once the season starts, I don't need the chart anymore. I mean, I know who can do what, and you know, and hopefully they're put in spots to, you know, that allow them to succeed. And if they succeed, obviously it helps us win.
Visiting with baseball assistant coach Alan Lucky this week on Inside Jag Nation. We're in the John Lieber clubhouse, and before we sat down to record, you had to move a huge pile of folders off the chair to create some space. Talk about the process of scouting other teams. You know, what are you looking for? How much time goes into that as you prepare for each team that you face?
Yeah, I think we do it a little different here than a lot of NCAA Division I schools. My focus on the scouting report, as far as the work that's done, is to make sure that I'm prepared for our team prepared defensively. How fast does each hitter run? What's their tendencies in terms of, do they pull the ball? Do they hit the ball opposite field? Do they make adjustments with two strikes? Do they hit more ground balls than fly balls? So my portion of that is to make sure that when Troy's first hitter steps in the box on Thursday, I know that the kid is a guy that hits ground balls up the middle, or he pulls balls through the six hole, et cetera, or if he's a base hit bunter or not. How well does he run? How should the outfield be positioned? Slight pull, slight oppo, straight up, whatever the case may be. That's my portion of that. Coach Prothro does the opposing pitcher's reports, and I'll come back to where we get all this data from in just a second, but Coach Prothro does their pitchers' reports, and then Coach Keller does his reports on the hitters as he's looking at it from his point, from a pitching standpoint. So at the end of the day, when it's time to play, we all have our certain areas that we're responsible for. Now, I need the information from Coach Keller to a certain degree, and I certainly need the information from Coach Pro to a certain degree, because we need to know who we're facing, you know, and whether we can run or whether we can't run, et cetera. Like, we've got a decent base stealing team. It's decent. It's not the percentage of success is not as high as it needs to be. Although there's a lot of bags stolen, there's too many times we've been thrown out. And so we're trying to make better decisions. It's like this weekend, their kid at Appalachian State, one of the best throwing catchers I've ever seen in my life. Well, I've got three kids that are three of the best runners that I've seen in my life. Well, he threw us out three times. I didn't run anymore the rest of the weekend. So it's one thing to be stubborn. It's another thing to be smart. Thankfully, we were really swinging the bat, so it didn't matter. But you got to be smart and know their catchers, what's their success rate of throwing out base runners, how their pitchers, what's the success rate of stealing bases against that particular pitcher. So a lot of the stuff that I go through in my mind offensively is how good the opponent is at certain aspects of the game. If I look up and see a pitcher that has three or four errors over the course of a season, odds are we're going to be bunting more against that kid. If base runners have stolen 14 for 14 when he's pitching, odds are we're running. If they've stolen 6 out of 14, we're not running, you know. So it's about analyzing stats and making sure that we're doing things that line up with our strengths and what we feel like are their weaknesses. Now, where do we get all the data? Coach Prothro does an outstanding job of making a list before the season ever starts. Like, he's got a list on it. It'll say Troy, you know, May series Troy, who should we ask for reports from? You know, and it'll be non-conference opponents that have also played Troy, and they'll send us the information on their pitchers, their hitters, their catchers, et cetera. But then we also watch a lot of film, because you can go on ESPN3 and watch just about every game, you know, or go on their website. I must have subscriptions to 8 different colleges' websites, you know, and it's like $10 a month, so who cares? But it gives us the video, you know, that we need to watch a particular pitcher. And I've got Evan Kirsch is in there right now watching, you know, Troy's pitchers on video for us right now. So it's a lot of stuff that goes into it. It's a lot of work to prepare for it. But our job is to win, and we're trying to do the things that give us the best chance to do so.
You don't have a lot of days like today. You know, the Troy series is moved up because it's last one of the regular season, and the teams want the extra day going into the Sun Belt tournament next week. But most of the spring, you've got midweek games Tuesday and or Wednesday. So on a day like today where you're home, it's only practice, what's a typical day for you and the rest of the staff in terms of getting here and what you do before the student athletes show up? And how long are you in for, knowing how many other hours you're putting in at games and over weekends?
Well, the time that we're here is it's almost, it's never wasted. You know, we're doing one thing or the other. Sometimes it's preparing for Troy. That stack that you see on my computer right there, that is all data on Troy that I need to make sure that I get organized before we play Thursday. So there's a lot of work to be done there. I don't need the kids for that. So that's, you know, that's stuff that's done in the morning or either at home in the evening. But there's also recruiting, you know, conversations that need to be had. Unfortunately, you know, you got guys at the end of the season, you know, who do we really want back? It's the toughest and most nauseating part of the job, but it comes with the territory. Which ones do we absolutely want back? Which ones do we need to release? How are we going to make it work with the kids that we've already signed that are coming in? That puzzle is a nonstop puzzle until the very end of the season. So it's that takes up an awful lot of the time. So it's usually either preparing for the next team or it's dealing with recruiting in one aspect or the other.
So you came to South Alabama, joined Coach Kittrell's staff as volunteer assistant in 2007 after a 5-year run as an assistant coach at Fairhope High School. You know, what made you want to come and join the staff, especially in that role? I mean, you know, volunteer assistant, it's a very generous offer of your time, but you've got enough experience. You probably could have gotten a full-time assistant job somewhere if you really pursued it. So tell us about coming south.
Well, what happened was I had a company that I started in 1993. I sold it in 2006. So I did that for 13 years, and that was my goal, to build it up and sell it and be in a position to retire if that's what I chose to do. So that plan worked out well. And 2 days after I sold my company, Coach Kittrell called, and I had played for Coach Kittrell back in the 80s, back when he was at Spring Hill College. And he called like 2 days after I sold it, and he said, I'd like for you to come talk to me about helping me with my infielders and helping me with the base runners and bunters, et cetera. And I said, Coach, I just sold my company. He said, I know. I said, I just sold it 2 days ago. And he said, just come talk to me. Just come talk to me. And I sit here now, and this is season number 11. I get asked all the time, why do you keep doing this? You know, why do you do it? And the truth of the matter is I love the game of baseball and I love the kids. I mean, it's that simple for me. I try to take pride in what we're doing. I try to learn from people that are extremely good at it at the highest levels. Like I said, to put us in position to be good teachers to these young men. Hopefully we're decent role models and try to teach them some things about, you know, off the field as well. We'll have a money management class this week. I'll take the whole team and I'll set them down and we'll go over things that I don't think that they get in the classroom. Sometimes, unfortunately, they don't get it at home, and it's things that I've seen in the business world that if we can help them by teaching them, maybe they'll avoid a lot of the mistakes that I've seen, you know, made over the years. And we'll be doing that I guess tomorrow afternoon.
Okay. You care to describe the differences in working under Coach Kittrell rather than working with Coach Calvi?
Well, they certainly are different. There's no question about that. I think that no matter – I look back at all the coaches that I played for, and it's kind of the same answer as I would give you here in terms of guys that I've coached with. Everybody's different. Coach Kittrell was extremely, extremely successful. I knew Coach Calvi was going to be successful here. I said it before he was even hired. But they do it two different ways. And you can see that in just about every sport. I mean, Greg Popovich's way with the San Antonio Spurs is different than most of the other guys. But there's not one way to do it. What you got to do is you got to learn from others. You got to figure out which of those things you like, which one of those things you want to keep and teach in your program, and then you got to be yourself and you trust what you know. And there's a thousand things I've learned working under Coach Calvi. There's a thousand under Coach Kittrell. They're different things. Their emphasis, you know, were different. And Coach Kittrell, for example, would have been. He probably would have spent more time on base running than we do. We spend more time on the execution of the swing and hitting, you know, than he did. So there are differences there for sure. But I can go back to Dan Jennings, the former Marlins manager and now with the Nationals. His father was our high school coach. I can tell you 15 things I learned from him. I can tell you things I learned from my father who coached me. Things I learned from Jack McKeon down with the Marlins in 03 and 04. You learn from different guys, and people have different styles, and you try to take the good, and that's who you become as a coach.
You mentioned it. You know, after going to junior college for a couple of years, you ended up at Spring Hill, and Coach Kittrell was your coach in 83. You were an all-conference student-athlete in 84 before you earned your degree. You ever have an interest in pursuing the game professionally, or did you kind of know at that point you were ready to go into the business world and pursue the career path you did till you came back to baseball?
Yeah, if I'd have got the opportunity to play at the next level at the degree that I wanted to, not just one of those walk-on free agent tryout things, which is what I had, I certainly would have continued playing the game as long as I could have. I actually didn't stop playing baseball and or really high-level major open slow pitch softball until I was close to 40 years old. I mean, I continued to play even while I had the business and all the other stuff. So I just love the game and always continue to play. But I looked at the coaching industry and I was like, that's a tough road. I mean, that's a tough road that takes a long time. And my degree from Spring Hill was in accounting. I was really comfortable with numbers, really comfortable with people. And, long story short, I decided to carry my wife and I got married that fall and of 84 and, you know, decided it was time to go to work and get in the business world. And hopefully one day I could get back into the game of baseball full time. And that's how it worked out.
Yeah, and that day came in 2002 when you joined the staff at Fairhope High, where you had attended years before. Tell us about, you know, what was it about that time? You still had the business, but then you also, that's when you got back in the, when you got into coaching. What was it that led to that decision that shifted your path that you followed now?
Well, when you're on your own business, obviously your hours are a little more flexible. So, and I had three great employees that worked for me, as hardworking and as honest and as friendly as you could get. I knew that the job would get done whether I was there or not. So it afforded me the opportunity to go in earlier. I'd go in at 6 instead of 8, and I'd work until 2 instead of 5. And that gave me the afternoon to go coach, you know, and help coach at Fairhope High School with Stu Fuller. So I was able to do that for those 4 or 5 years. That's when I sold the company, and then Coach Kittrell called. I've had three opportunities to go coach or do front office stuff with the Marlins, actually. All three times I said no thanks. And I mean, I've born and raised here. I love it here. Our daughters are here. Our grandson is our first grandson has been here for a year or so, and I love it here. And my thought process was, if I'm going to coach and stay home, South Alabama is the highest that I can possibly get to and be able to do the other things that were so important to me. So when the opportunity was here, you know, it kept me in the game and it kept me home. And that's exactly where I want to be.
You ever look back now and think some days, you know, I kind of miss the business world? Or is it just being outside and around the kids that you're like, I wouldn't trade it for the world?
I wouldn't trade it for the world. I don't miss it at all. I tell you what I do miss, though. People occasionally call me and they'll say, listen, I'm thinking about doing this or that. The fun part of business to me is trying to figure out how to do something the most efficient and effective and profitable way, and be honest and fair all at the same time. You know, how do you get there? And it's fascinating to me to the talk about starting of a business and the ideas and how to shape it and how to mold it. That part is what intrigues me. Like one of my son-in-laws, he was going self-employed this past year, and I had an absolute blast with him trying to help him, you know, figure out what we felt like was the best route and the most efficient things to do and how to market and all those things. So the rush of starting one is, again, the grind of doing one, no thanks. I'm out on that. I love coming to Stanky Field and working with these kids.
You know, do you have a set timeline in mind of how much longer you'd like to coach before you start thinking, all right, there are going to be some more grandkids running around, you're going to give time to them and the family? And, you know, kind of what long-term coaching goals do you have for as long as you stay in this industry of what you want to accomplish?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a difficult question for me, because what I've always said is, as long as I am loving what I'm doing, and I'll always love the game, but if I'm still having a blast hanging around the kids and kids are still, you know, they're respectful and they're listening and they're learning and I'm seeing kids get better, it's going to be hard for me to walk away from it. If I had an opportunity to be a head coach one day, would I be excited and love to take it? Yeah, I would. I would absolutely love to do that. But what I'm doing right now, especially since Coach Calvi's got, you know, been here, he lets me go, and you have no idea how much I appreciate that. He lets me run the defense. He will occasionally say, what about this or what about that? But for the most part, he lets me go on the defense. We will talk about things offensively before the series begins. Occasionally, we'll talk about things before a particular inning begins. But he lets me go, and the freedom and the responsibility that comes with it, and the freedom that he gives me, is something that I'm extremely grateful for, and it makes it very easy and fun to come to work. I mean, because he's black and white, I'm black and white, and you know, for the most part, we're on the same page. We're thinking the same. I think we've had two times this year where I did something offensively that he wouldn't have done. And a couple, of, you know, one of them worked and one of them didn't, you know. So we communicate real well. He's an absolute joy to work with. He's probably, there's two people in my life that are extremely witty and funny, and he is one of them. And so we probably have more fun than should be allowed when you're coaching at this level, but I can assure you that we do. And including this past weekend, there's just always something that he comes up with from a angle that you weren't expecting that keeps you in stitches, especially after we win. So we have a lot of fun, and the love of the game and the love of the kids is still there. And as long as I'm having fun, you know, I'm sure I'm going to keep doing it.
We've talked about earlier relationships you have. You know, you mentioned Dan Jennings, who you grew up with and went on and had prominent roles as general manager and manager of the Marlins. So here you are, and you've talked about the guys that you've learned from. Like, explain that to us. Is that simply just going down in spring training and watching how they work before the year? How do you get access to those guys to learn what you've learned over the years? Or do you just ask for meetings and just that, you know, how does that work?
Well, most of the connections that I have came from the fact that Dan Jennings was with the Marlins at the time in 03-04, which won the whole World Series in 03. But I would go down with Dan, and we would, you know, we'd get up in the morning, we'd go to the office, do his, you know, assistant GM work, so I'm watching that operation. And then he hooked me up with Bone Hill, who's the infield instructor there that I was that I mentioned earlier, who's so gifted. And then so Bone is good to me because he knows I'm friends with Danny, you know. And then Bone sees that I'm serious about learning how to be. I want to be as good as he is at what he does. And I still talk to Bone. I still talk to him every 2 or 3 weeks. Something will happen, and I'll pick up the phone, and the guy's got the answer. He's just absolutely brilliant. But because of my relationship with Dan, it opened up the door with Bone. And then the next thing you know, Bone, he's okay with me. He thinks highly of me because he knows I want to learn, and I know when to keep my mouth shut. You know, and then next thing you know, he's got me talking to Bo Porter, who was with the Marlins at the time as an outfield coach. Well, you can learn some more. Then Bo goes to the Braves. Now he's coaching third. Well, they, you know, a few years back, I used to coach first. Now I've been coaching third for 4 years. Well, I need Bo's input, you know. Bone coaches first for the Marlins, so I picked his brain there. Joe Espada, the Yankees third base coach, he played here at the University of Mobile. He's a little younger than I am, but we knew each other through those chains, but he also worked for the Marlins at one point. And Rich Donnelly, if you don't know who Rich Donnelly is, I would encourage anybody out there to go YouTube Rich Donnelly and just look up a story. It's called The Chicken Runs at Midnight, and you'll just have to trust me. You'll be glad that you did. The Chicken Runs at Midnight, Rich Donnelly. But what happened was I called Bone about when I first started coaching third here, and he said, I coached third for Detroit for 2 years, and I sucked at it. He said, I'm not teaching you that. He said, but I got a friend of mine that would love to talk to you, and that's Rich Donnelly. And like I said, he's done it for 30 years in the big leagues. And that's just how it happens. You know, most of it started with the Marlins stuff. And then, you know, if you're really respectful of their time and you ask intelligent questions and they know that you want to learn, most people in any industry enjoy talking about things that they know they're good at. But they want to tell the right people and they want to talk to the right people. So I think it's a matter of how you present yourself or who introduced you to them and things like that. But most people enjoy talking about stuff that they're good at. And that's fortunately for me, you know, I got to learn from those guys.
Visiting this week on Inside Jag Nation with assistant baseball coach Alan Lucky. Jaguars host Troy at Stanky Field this weekend, Thursday, Friday, 6:30 p.m., Saturday at 1. Sun Belt Tournament starts on Tuesday next week. When you were a kid growing up in Spanish Fort and going to Fairhope High, did you dream of a career in baseball? Were you interested in any other sports, or was this like always your focus?
No, I played all three sports growing up. You know, I played football, played basketball, and I played baseball. I knew all the time that baseball was going to be the sport that I could probably play the longest at. It was, these are real numbers. I was 5'7", 115 pounds when I graduated from high school. So it's the only game that I could possibly play at a higher level. But I love basketball almost as much as I do baseball. We'll go on the road, and Coach Prothro loves it like I do. Coach Carden does as well. We watch basketball more than you would believe. Now the others, they can take or leave basketball, but we enjoy it. So the NBA playoffs that are going on, we pretty much watch a basketball game every night once we get home from whatever we're doing. But baseball was the sport that I thought I could play the longest, and that's kind of how it worked out. But it's what I always wanted to do. I mean, if you'd asked me when I was 6 years old, I said I want to be a professional baseball player. I mean, it's just a game I've always loved.
Well, visiting with assistant baseball coach Alan Lucky this week, and before we let you go, Coach, just a couple questions more about you on a personal level. People get a chance to know the man that's hiding under the helmet in the third base box. You don't have a lot of it because of the way the season goes, number of games, travel, but when you got some free time, what's your favorite thing to do?
I do what I did yesterday. I think that's the second day off that I've taken since January, but I do what I did yesterday. My wife and I went to the beach, parked it there for about 5 hours, and just let the wind blow and listen to the water. And that's what we do just about every summer. We go to the Bahamas and spend some time down at the Atlantis Resort on Paradise Island down there, but we love the beach. And but if I get to do, as long as I'm doing stuff with Carrie, my wife, when I'm not at the baseball field, I'm happy. And then our daughters both live in Fairhope. We love our two son-in-laws as well. We've got the grandson. So it's like perfect. We'll have a Sunday game at home. We play at 1. I'm home at 5. All seven of us, you know, the two, Jenna and Kayla, our daughters, the two son-in-laws, Landon and Chris, they're there. Pierce, the grandson, is there as well, and Carrie. So we have family day every Sunday, you know, and I hope that continues for the next 30 years, you know.
Outside of baseball, what's your favorite sport?
Basketball, no question.
What's the best athletic event you've ever attended as a fan?
World Series 03 with the Marlins.
Which game did you go to?
All of them.
What athletic event is at the top of your bucket list that you've never been to yet?
I would have to say the Super Bowl. I've been to some NFL games, but I've never been to a Super Bowl. I'd love to go to a Super Bowl in New Orleans with the Saints playing in it. That would be awesome.
What's the best place you've ever been on vacation to?
No question, Paradise Island, Bahamas.
You got a choice to go one place you've never been. Where is that vacation going to be?
Oh. My wife wants to go to San Francisco. I've been to a lot of places, but I have not been to San Francisco, so I'd probably have to say San Fran.
What's your favorite movie?
Any movie with Denzel Washington in it.
Favorite book?
I'm not a big reader, to say the least. I would definitely pick the Bible on that one.
Favorite musical artist?
Big Bruno Mars fan. That may shock some people, but I love Bruno Mars. He's my guy right now.
And when they come back here in just a few years and make the movie of the Alan Lucky story, what actor is going to play the starring role?
I hope it's Denzel. I would be honored if he would do it. He's my guy.
That's assistant baseball coach Alan Lucky. Jaguars and Trojans at Stanky Field this weekend, Thursday, Friday night, Saturday afternoon. On to the postseason. Coach, we wish you the best of luck the rest of the way. Enjoyed it. Thanks so much for the time.
Glad to be here. Glad to do it. And hopefully we can stay hot.
Inside Jag Nation is a production of South Alabama Athletics. Any rebroadcast or distribution of this podcast without the express written consent of South Alabama Athletics is strictly prohibited. Remember, you can find a new episode of Inside Jag Nation every week on USAJaguars.com or have them automatically uploaded to your smartphone by subscribing for free on iTunes. Keep up to date with the Jags by following us on Twitter with @USAJaguarSports and @JagNationUSA. Thanks for listening, and go Jags! Wow!